Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, don't be exciting nights. Have some honest men webbing aboard. SP futures this morning are up 12. Dow futures up 119. NASDAQ futures up 45. That little bit of dive yesterday. Come on. We can't be going down this market. We got the Fed set to pump this up. Who were the two guys going to pump you up?
Hans and Franz.
Yeah, I haven't seen those guys in ages, have you?
No, but Dana Carvey and Kevin Nealon.
Yeah, pump you up.
Early 90s.
You're happy to know that your Fed has put inflation expectations at the heart of a major policy review. For 40 years, the specter of high inflation haunted the Federal Reserve. They just didn't know how to not count it for a while and worried about it. I think if we went back to 1980, they would say there was none back then. I mean, it is really something. What do you make of this thing in New Zealand? Is that about the most... I'm not saying that they're less violent than Finland, but I got to believe a murder in New Zealand is fairly rare.
Yeah, I think so too. And
49 people.
Yikes! Scary stuff.
Yeah, it is pretty bizarre. I mean, I don't know where would he suppose to even get armed like that in New Zealand. I suppose the guns are all over the place if you really look for them. So it's somewhat of a Kevin. Hey, we're talking about. New Zealand, and I got to believe, from what we know, our friend Dave Murphy went there and spent a month, and you know some people that have moved there, and it's got to be one of the least, other than their rugby, where they take out all their frustrations. They got to be about the least violent people there are. How is it the people?
Not anymore.
No. How is it the people went to places that were like penal colonies, like Australia and I suspect New Zealand? Are less violent than we are here in the U.S.
You seen their sports, though? You seen Aussie rules football?
I know they run a lot.
it's sort of rugby with a field goal post, with goal posts.
Allegedly, they run something like 6 miles during an Aussie rules football game. You're moving all the time, right? I've never really seen it, but I met a guy who played it, and the guy was about 6'3", absolutely ripped. He was probably... 225 or so, 220 maybe, not at all like, no kind of gut that, like, plays lineman for, he looked like a strong safety kind of guy. I mean, that's the size they all are, kind of, because you're running the whole time, right, aren't you? Somehow or other, there's, like, no huddles or something?
Something like that, yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, me neither.
It used to be on TV on a pretty regular basis. Anyway, as far as the story goes, I really haven't had a chance to go find a news source or a news feed from New Zealand. I think at this point to seriously comment on it other than to say how horrible that is. I really don't have anything to say about it. I want to hear how the story unfolds.
Yeah.
We should be ready for a lot of our media creatures to spout to spout off about it, to offer opinions without knowing actually much about what happened. And I think the best coverage we're ever going to find is if we can find local coverage.
Well, the only thing I'm with you on that. Last night I was digging through what I could, and all everybody said was a large loss of life. I was not really prepared for the 49 this morning when they said large. I was not that. And if you're one of the 20 or the 15, I just this 49 number is pretty darn big.
Yes, it is.
Anywho, So we were a lot of basketball.
Yeah, it's just sad state of affairs.
Yeah, and everybody
what else to say about it.
It is somewhat interesting, though. You did mention, I think we do it a lot, Kevin, but we're one of the few people, the people on our show that will have an opinion sort of on something, but it'll be a very light opinion because you'll say, I really don't have all the information. But it is interesting that when you watch people that are on national, most of them don't have that kind of discipline. I mean, everybody has something in life that they're very good at. And other stuff, they're like everybody else, right? It just happens to be that my interest in my education has been in essentially economics on the monetary side and a little bit of behavioral economics. And I've kept with it. I still read stuff on that, what puts me to sleep, I know. But it is astounding to me how many people will talk about Fed and Fed activities and money supply that have absolutely nothing, know nothing what they're talking about. Yeah, somehow they're on. I'm sure there's people on. They'll bring some guy on to talk about whether a bridge is going to stay up. It's not even a structural engineer, and yet he knows everything about it. But it's kind of a. By the way, Mandy Weber, I keep trying to. Where do you go to become a registered expert on something? Well, Mandy's young enough that somewhere in his lifetime we'll probably get an extraterrestrial guy to land on the White House lawn, like in the Day of the Earth Stood Still. And I want Mandy to be on CNBC or Fox 30 seconds later as an expert on extraterrestrial life.
Yeah, it's amazing that to be a pundit, you don't need to be. You don't need to know anything. You can just be a pundit, and that's why Matt would be so good. He would stand out at it because he actually does know a few things
about extraterrestrial life.
Oh yes, absolutely. Oh. Give him 5 minutes.
That's all I need.
One thing's for sure. I think your dog came from another planet, so I don't.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, there's a guy with that. An odd creature. He's 1.5 going on 15, Kevin. And he's like Irish. If he never met you before, he doesn't want to meet you.
Oh, okay.
It's a very Irish thing. You haven't had a drink in this bar before? Funny. Get out of this bar. Okay, well, how did you get in here? My uncle used to tell me you shouldn't drive the Dan Ryan's. He drove it before. Okay. Oh, anyway. So, Kevin, before we talk about the admissions thing, and the million parts of morals that touches on. What about basketball? Matty and I were talking about the only big upset to knock somebody off the bubble so far is the St. Mary's Gonzaga thing.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example of the perverse incentives that are involved in a conference tournament, because by losing, Gonzaga is actually going to make more money off of the NCAA tournament than it would have by winning.
For years, right? Because it would pay out after like over 20 years or something?
Well, they fund you over 6 years.
Six
so
years, okay.
A payout of, I don't know, if it's probably close to $300,000 per game played. And they pay it out every year for 6 years. But
so you get
what I'm getting at is that the West Coast Conference was going to get one team in. It was going to get Gonzaga and nobody else. And Gonzaga's still going to be in because it's, you know, it's a one or a two seed. So by St. Mary's winning, now the West Coast Conference is getting a second team into the conference or into the NCAA tournament because they, St. Mary's is going to get the automatic bid. Now, before anybody says, he's saying Gonzaga tanked on purpose, I am not saying that. What I am saying, though, is there is an incentive to tank on purpose, and that should always be a problem.
Well, there's also an incentive to not basically bust your hind end on a conference tournament if you know you're number one or two seed.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I will go back to
why overexpend energy.
Well, I'll go back to if he was sitting here, I'm sure he would deny, and then deny. Mike Bray's was it first or second season when the Irish had a good team and they had Troy Murphy. He actually thought he had a team that could contend. You know, he might have a Final Four team. He was not at all. I mean, they won a couple games in the Big East tournament, and they lost, I think, in the semifinals. He was not at all unhappy to not have to play one more.
He used to say it out loud that he didn't worry too much about the conference tournament. He's changed his tune on that, and they actually did win it in the ACC a couple of years ago.
Well, they did. They won it when it meant something.
But he wasn't always that way. And part of the reason I don't think anybody's going to tank is that these guys achieve at a high level because they're very competitive. And so they are just, it's not most athletes' nature to give less than, you know, less than their all. Some, yes, some are incredibly gifted and they are lazy a lot of the times. But especially at the college level, and especially for a team like Gonzaga, who gets really good players but doesn't get the best players, you know, these guys achieve at a high level because they're very, very driven, and they're not going to all of a sudden not be driven. Speaking of achieving at a high level, did you see what Zion Williamson did last night?
I watched the first half. He was pretty good.
He came back, and he went 13-13 for the game.
Wow. He was he's pretty awesome.
And some of the highlight reels are just incredible.
Well,
I hope the Bulls successfully are bad enough to get him.
He looks like LeBron.
That would be fun to watch for as long as he was there.
You think he's as good as LeBron?
Might be. It's hard to compare because I didn't see LeBron as a. I did actually see his freshman year. He did it in the NBA. So
yeah.
He's in that conversation.
He's the only guy I've ever seen besides LeBron that has the combination of the, you know, the fearsome power and size along with the athleticism and skill. So in that regard, I'd say it's a fair comparison. Zion has if you want to call it an issue, he has weight issues that LeBron never had to deal with, and so that's going to be important for him. But I think when he gets to the NBA, he'll be even leaner. And then he's going to be really scary.
Yeah, because he'll hire a personal trainer and a nutritionist and all of those things that they generally don't have in college. I have no idea what his personal circumstances are, but in most cases, the college players don't get that until they are done playing and their agent hires their personal trainer and nutritionist for them.
Exactly, yeah. And then when basketball becomes your job as opposed to, you know, a quote-unquote extracurricular activity, I think that makes a difference, too. The one thing I will say is that at this point in their lives, 19 years old, 18, 19, he's a better shooter than LeBron was from the outside. So that's scary. That's really scary.
You know what? I'm not going to be one of these guys. Well, when you say it, then I guess you're always going to say it. You know, you walk back and forth to school against the wind. How is it? I think in a lot of ways, basketball, especially when you didn't have the line in the 24 second clock or 30 second clock, was a lot rougher. There was a lot more contact, I think, or at least as much. How is it that a lot of the elite athletes today constantly are taking games off? When you see the Bill Russells, the Chamberlains, those kinds of guys, Jerry West, they would miss like one game every 4 years or something. I mean, are these guys really this hurt all the time, or what is it that's causing? Even the pros, I mean, how many games a month is Levine's not out 3 games? I'd be stunned. You know, I mean, is it the style of play? What is it? I'm not saying they're all weenies. They're not. But somehow or another, they all seem, I mean, you don't see guys that at the high level that, and LeBron does, and LeBron never misses a game. But there's very few people like that. I mean, everybody seems to be hurt once in a while. I mean, I don't get it necessarily. I mean, they have better trainers now and better everything else they ever used to have, but you know what I'm saying? It seems like people are out more.
Tom, I can only hypothesize. I don't really have the definitive answer for you. It could be that they push too hard on training and don't leave themselves enough recovery time. It could be, I don't know. It could be something along the lines of they just build themselves up to be too tight, and they're more susceptible.
I think that's it, actually.
To pulls and things like that. But you know, honestly, that's not an expert opinion. That's just
no. The same feeling. I mean, you hear Scottie Pippen talk about how much more contact and how much more touching and how much more banging there was, and he said even he could not play defense today the way he played back then because it was all contact. Did Scottie ever miss a game?
Hardly ever, but I will say, yes, of course he couldn't play defense. What is he, about 45 years old now?
Yeah, well, Now, who does it? Where did that count?
Stealing, stealing, and rebending a old Ty Cobb joke.
I was going to say Ty Cobb was the original on that one. Could you hit 300 today? Well, no, but I'm 50 years old. Or was it 45 or something?
Yeah, no, I think it was more like 65.
Yeah. Oh, but you know, I guess we'll never know. I do know that Dr. J would tell me that when they get that. Injury where you see people reach out and all of a sudden they pull a pec or something. Janet said, well, those are guys that all they do is do bench. And when you do bench, you're supposed to immediately go and do something where you pull on your back muscles to pull the pecs back to where they're supposed to be. Because if you just do bench, all they do is tighten up, even though they get stronger. So you have to be very careful when you weightlift, especially if you're playing basketball, which calls for all kinds of rotation of all kinds of joints, that you do it right, or you could really screw something up.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that's what happened to Derrick Rose.
And again, they have trainers that work with them, but that doesn't mean that the athletes are with their trainers full time. It doesn't mean that they always follow the directions. A lot of times, I want to lift more than the guy next to me, and so they'll push themselves in the wrong ways because they're competitive.
But you know, when Derrick Rose came back, and this is a total guy that's totally on the outside, when he came back and he had all the training for 2 years after the first knee injury and so forth, he looked like he had a football trainer, not a basketball trainer. He looked like some of the guys at Notre Dame when we used to see come off the football team and start playing basketball at the Rock in December. They had like 15 extra pounds of I'll use the term football muscle. It was like the guy from Indiana that played football and basketball under Bobby Knight. What was his name? The guy from
Quinn Buckner. Yeah.
And Quinn Buckner, what do you have to lose? 25 pounds during the basketball season to get the basketball shape?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember Bob Golic doing the same thing. He had to put on weight for wrestling and lose it to play linebacker in football.
Well, actually, he wrestled at 195. It was the other way around.
Oh, it was the other way around? I thought it was.
No, he did not wrestle heavyweight. He was light heavyweight.
Oh, okay.
Matter of fact, one of two, only two, two-sport All-Americans in the same year in Notre Dame history. Who was the other?
One of only two in the same year. Was Moose Krause the other one?
Yep. Football and basketball. Well, you'll never see that again, will you?
Yep. And for people who don't know this, Moose Krause was not only a great football and basketball player, he was the athletic director for a lot of years there.
And everybody knew Lou, or knew Moose, and he was the guy.
Everybody knew him. He was... Actually, he turned down the gig of being the commissioner of the old AFL before it merged into the NFL.
And arguably one of the nicest men you ever met. And
yep.
my buddy, Jim Virovec, this we were going to one of the Rackney dinners, and, you know, and we're older, you know, we're in our 30s. Well, Moose Krause used to play softball with Jim's old man, George Virovec, for the Chicago Screw Company, which way back in the day was like, they were like the Bobcats, and you know, we're talking in the 30s,
yeah.
And so
yeah, now it's a gentleman's club.
Yeah, yeah, and so she says, make sure you go talk to Moose and tell him you're George's son. You know, so and he didn't want to do it. Big crowd, is 1,000 people there. So finally, I said, hey, your mom said to go talk to him. Get up there. So we walk up. I shake Moose's hand. Hey, Moose, how are you? Blah blah blah. I'm Tom Howe from whatever. So Jim goes, Moose, my dad is George Virovec. Really? Man, Jim, I heard your dad died. How's your mother? I don't remember his mother's name. He remembered his mother's name and everything. I heard George died. I'm sorry I didn't make the wake. And I'm going, what the hell? You had to see the guy in 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people have that talent. I mean, and he certainly did. I mean, anyway. So, Kevin, what do you make of the, I was being cynical, imagine that, me and Maddie on the way in this morning, this college admissions scandal, and you start looking at all the different motivations and all this stuff, and the people like that we know that are director of admissions at places and so forth, and it is amazing. I started this off yesterday with Lou by saying, whenever there's an economic need in America, somebody will fill the void. I mean, that is the essence of competition, of you know, people being you know, ingenious and so forth. I mean, if you were to see, but I've never seen Gene's desk. I've never been up. I've only been to Michigan once, and it was years and years ago. I can only imagine, now this is being figurative in terms of somebody's desk, of having 300 slots or whatever hell she's got in the engineering school at Michigan, which, of course, is a very high-end spot to go. And on the other desk, there's, you know, 3,000 applications. And it only, I can only imagine what people would be willing to do to get from desk A to desk B. And to not think that there some sort of a culture grows up in the middle is somewhat naive. Now, it could be just somebody reviewing somebody's application, saying, hey, you knucklehead, you played tennis and you didn't put it down there. Even if it was 1 year, make sure you put it down there. And these people are looking for extracurriculars. Or Manny Weber, for God's sake, have you been serving dinners up on Friday night for the homeless people for 5 years? Make sure you put that in there. They like to see that. So it can go from being very innocuous to having somebody quote look over your application to being a lot different than that. And there's various degrees of what people are willing to pay for. And in this day and age, to be perfectly blunt, there's a lot of, I'll use the term, yuppie couples that are, it's important for their kid to get into a high-end school for them as it is the kid, even if he or she doesn't really belong there or care about being there. And there's, when you start seeing all these different motivations, I mean, it's kind of what I've sort of been trained in the economics area. You look at every input and every different spot, every motivation all along the way, and where the money could be. And you know what, Kevin, something like this really does not surprise me all that much.
Yeah, and when you think about it, it isn't surprising. I do think what you have is people who have the means, and what they're trying to do is they're setting up their kids, with who in many cases were just totally raised without motivation. You know, silver spoon kids in the most in many cases in the most pejorative sense of the term. You know, there's a lot of people who are born wealthy, raised wealthy, parents, you know, the families have a lot of money, and they're very, very hardworking, and you know, a lot of wealthy families take that as a responsibility. But you also get people who, you know, where the kids are just raised getting every single benefit, no borders, no boundaries. And what the parents are doing is they're trying to set them up for life, because in many of these cases, once you're in the club, then you're home free. You know, you get that Yale degree or an Ivy League degree. Now, you know, I don't know where USC fits in there, unless you're talking about, you know, media studies or,
by the way, Kevin, you mentioned
acting or music. But once you're in the club, you know, there's always going to be someone that's part of that who will hire you as a consultant, who will, you know, you pretty much have it made, even if you aren't that good at what you do.
By the way, unbeknownst to you, because you have this prejudicial thing going, USC has made dramatic strides to be in that club, even though you and I don't like them because of a lifetime of hating him.
I know it was just me throwing out a jab at USC. When I was young, my dad used to say, "Pay for me to go to college anywhere, as long as it wasn't USC."
We just wanted O.J. Simpson, and they had him. What can I tell you?
Actually, I don't think we could recruit O.J. Simpson out of the San Francisco Junior College.
No. It was a, but you know, as to the, most parents, I mean. I know more about people that you and I graduated with, because I live in the Chicago area, more than you, that have all kinds of money, and the kids always had a job, no matter what. And by the way, you say hello, they sit there and talk to you, they look you right in the eye, you know, yes sir, no sir. And then we know people that the kids have never had a job, in which case all the parent does is get calls on the cell phone from the kid, can I have money for this and that and the other thing, which of course I would never allow.
So, can I go to Europe for spring break?
Yeah, you know, and so
all the kids are going.
Yeah, the usual. But I really feel sorry for the second group, because they're so totally sheltered and have added their own. And then all of a sudden, the parents think at age 17 they can't get on a bus. At age 18, they're going 2,000 miles away to college. That's a big spread, Kevin. But this is not about parenting. But I'm saying, I mean, the line I would draw, obviously, you know, if my kid asked me to check their essay for punctuations, would I do it? Probably. Would I pay for them to have somebody else take their test? No. You know, where's the line? You know, would I say, hey, you knucklehead, you played football for 2 years. Put it down here. You know, you know these people. Would I say that? Yeah. You know, if assuming they did play football, would I tell them to put it down there and then have the assistant coach give them $50, say if everybody calls, say the guy was on the bench and practiced hard. No, I wouldn't do that. But I'm saying there seems to be lines here that you and I would not cross that other people did. I mean, some people did the Derrick Rose. I was talking to
Some people, you know, here, get this, because it gives you some insight into the mindset, the hypocrisy, the hubris. In February, William H. Macy did an interview with Men's Journal. He is married to Felicity Huffman, one of the people who was indicted, and they have him on tape too, but not saying quite enough to actually come down with an indictment, but it appears that he knew. But anyway, they asked him, what human qualities do you most despise? Oh, dishonesty, self-delusion, lack of character. And then he goes on and says, President Trump is sort of my touchstone for those qualities, for the qualities I don't like. What living person do you most admire? I married very, very well. It's great fun for me to watch Felicity. I love the way she mothers our daughters.
Well, but strike yourself, strike a line in what where we're going on this. And again, this is just my personality. I hope it makes for good education for people. And plus, we got to go break in a sec. But flip the other side of this, Kevin. Lou has told us on 100 occasions that you're going to pay more for the kid from Harvard, even though he might be an idiot. Well, he's probably not an idiot. We hope he wouldn't be. Than some kid who's every bit as good or just as smart from even Notre Dame, but certainly Loyola or Bradley Law School or someplace. Because in his rookie year, you can bill this kid out at $500 an hour and not bat an eyelash. If one of your clients says, where did you get Matt Weber? Well, I got him from George Marshall. He's a first year from George Marshall, and you're charging me $500 for this kid. What's the matter with you? But it's from Harvard, you get away with it. I mean, the way the accreditation and the way, I mean, society does that. I'll use that stupid term, society. Doesn't make it, to me, opens up the market. Will I pay to get into Harvard instead of just going to George Marshall and learning the law the same way? Will I be willing to bribe somebody to get there? The answer is yeah. It's all part of a big mess, you know what I'm saying. It's not just one thing. Save it for after break there, but S&P Futures still up 12. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821 1-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow's Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber. I'm going to say that I could be a newspaper guy and write headlines, and I could be the laziest mofo in the world in the last 2 years. How many times have we seen this headline? Dow set to climb more than 100 points on U.S.-China deal trade deal hoax. I could use that every other day for the last 8 months. Anyway, S&P futures up 13 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 44. Dow futures there are up 125, just like they said, up more than 125. This all started in Asia last night after our markets looked kind of crummy yesterday. DAX up 102.9%. FTSE up 51.7%. CAC around up 51.9%. But the latest rumor is we're going to have Z come here. At the same time, we're going to announce the thing at the end of April. That's the big rumor, even though if you listen to the guy who's actually doing the deal, he's saying no. Hang Seng up 160. And the other guys were close. Actually, the other markets were up. I'll get those in a second. For some reason, they're not on CNBC here. There we go. Nikkei up 163.7%. Shanghai up 31. A full percent. Bank of Japan keeps monetary policy steady. They've concluded that their economy sucks so bad that they're still going to stay with minus 0.1% interest, and they have to buy up enough of everything to make sure that they're the buyer of last resort, that nobody gets any interest. I can't believe that policy is working. They've tried it for years. They refuse to admit it isn't. But it's their policy, and they're sticking to it. Oil down 5 cents, Brent down 29 cents. This is taking a chunk out of gold yesterday, but now today, up $8, is 1303. Gold up and down every day with the dollar. Very bizarre. Silver up 19 cents. That's a big move for silver. Anyway, what do you got for us? All these numbers are crazy, aren't they? What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start so far this morning on the area expressways. The only area of note is on the Stevenson, northbound at LaGrange Road. There's apparently several cars with flat tires on the shoulder due to a large pothole in the area. IDOT's on the way to try and fill that pothole this morning before the morning rush, but that's affecting several folks coming in on the Stevenson northbound right near LaGrange Road, so keep that in mind. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are looking good so far this morning. Same for the Eisenhower. Kennedy and the Edens looking good as well. Suburban tollways are all quiet, so we're off to a great start. Everything else looks good out there. Weather today, not a great weather day. Will be cold and rainy. Could have some sleet mixed in with that rain. A high of just 39. Right now it's overcast and 37, kind of drizzling, but no real accumulation or precipitation that's going to do any damage. Just be annoying. For our Phoenix listeners, beautiful day. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, Coyotes are continuing to make their playoff push. They blew out the Ducks last night 6-1. Blackhawks were off. Bulls and Suns were off as well. Of course, it's a conference tournament week in college hoops, and our local teams not faring very well as we expected outside of Bradley, who notched their tournament ticket last week. Illinois season's officially over, and it was the worst season in Illini basketball history. 12-21 is their final record, as they were blown out last night in the second round of the Big Ten tournament by Iowa, 83-62. Northern Illinois, though, is hanging on. They upset Toledo 80-76 in the quarterfinals of the MAC tournament, so they'll advance to the semis. Looking forward to seeing how far they can go. Chief.
Toledo's not good enough to get in Northern Illinois, are they?
Oh, God, no.
No, okay.
But they're like 23-7 and had a very nice season.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to try one more time here and look at what's the movie or the TV show where the guy says, well, if I could do this for you, would that be like worth something to you? That line comes from somewhere and I can't place it. We have talked, and you and I more than anybody on the show, have talked, especially with your new position as a dean or whatever you are, big shot at your place, at the junior college group in Indiana.
I prefer Grand High Exalted Mystic Ruler.
Okay, well, there you go. What was the kingfish? Was that what he was? In the Amos and Andy, he was something? He was something. Was he the Mystic Ruler?
Don't remember.
I don't remember. God, it was so long. The show's been banned for 50 years. Anyway, when you look at what's going on here and how the colleges are set up and how expensive this has become, I mean, you would think, I mean, I would think, from the economic side, I know, Kevin, you've mentioned that your particular junior college place wants to do for 2 years everything for everybody could do in a four-year place, and in fact place them in some, you know, if somebody drops out of Purdue Engineering or Illinois Engineering, your guy or girl is ready to go, which is the same thing that College of DuPage here is doing in Illinois, and or if somebody drops out of the Illinois program, their person's ready to slip right in. Same books, same stuff, same everything. And it saves you like a real lot of money. And by the way, you know the kid for sure really wants to do this, and all kinds of positive reasons to do just that. And it wouldn't be that big of a step, though, for College of DuPage or you guys, hope none of your people are listening, for three or four even retired or whatever engineering guys or say, you know, why don't you guys have a four-year, you know, civil engineering program? Because we really only had three or four civil engineering guys at Purdue or Notre Dame anyway. Why don't we just come drop by you guys? We live right here. And we'll do this for another few years. We didn't really want to retire anyway. We're getting a pension. And now you're going to get the same education there as you would have at Purdue, Notre Dame, Indiana for, say, pick one of them, civil engineering, computer engineering, whatever. I mean, I'm not an engineer, so I don't know what's all involved in that. And so you actually do have a four-year degree that's pretty close to anybody else's. And now the question, your people are going to say, Kevin, you're out of your mind. We'll never get the certification. We'll never get this. We'll never get that. We'll never get the dough. You're going to get some pushback from the Purdue's, the Indiana's, especially if you say, by the way, this degree is just as good. And even if it is, 5 years from now you're spitting out people for 3 years. Are those people, your people, going to get hired by the same firms that are still hiring the people from Illinois, Purdue, Notre Dame? And the answer is probably no. I mean, they say there's way more to this massive puzzle than just some good-looking lady, an actress, getting arrested for something yesterday. I mean, this has been years in coming. You know, if I could get your kid from here to here, would it be worth something to you? And the answer is yes. Now, should it be? Maybe no. And that's somebody else's fault, right? I mean, am I way too...
Well, no, here's a factor that's supposed to be in the mix. Is the business itself, the business of being an educator, implies a certain kind of integrity. Okay? It's more, you know, you're supposed to be developing people. You're supposed to be doing more than just the academic. You're supposed to be making better people. You know, in my case, the part of it that I take very, very seriously is developing leaders and leadership. leaders have to be trustworthy. So it's, you know, if that's not part of the equation, then you're not fulfilling the mission as an educator. Now, are there people who don't fulfill the mission as educators? Absolutely there are. And, you know, you see it sort of with the athletics tail wagging the dog in so many places. So I know it's not a perfect world, but what I am saying is that when you start saying, you know, body, mind, and spirit, as an example, as a holistic educational approach, that to just ignore anything about the spirit, whether you want to do that as, you know, as a part of a religious mission at a faith-based school, or whether you just want to say building integrity at a public institution, and that's the quote spirit part of the equation, that if you don't do that, you're just not doing your job. You're not doing it properly. You're not doing what people expect.
Well, but some, and, Kevin, if you, some of this is morphed. And again, we went to a Catholic university, and some of this is morphed from being moral for everybody to I'm the only person that can be immoral. I mean, if you walked into Notre Dame, Purdue, Northwestern, and you were Rodney Dangerfield and said, I'll build you a new library. By the way, there was a movie about this. Will you let me in? The answer is yes. I mean, some of this is outrage that somebody got the money versus the university. It's sort of like college sports. Wait a minute, an assistant coach got the bribe and not us? This is BS. I mean, how can that happen? You mean some player got paid? They're not supposed to get paid. That money's all out. I mean, this morality, to me, has gotten very warped. I mean, there's no question if you make a huge contribution to a place, they'll make allowances. I don't think. And most, I mean, does anybody think they won't?
I think they will.
Yeah, well, what's the difference?
But where, you know, where is the allowance? Where do you make the allowance? Is it somebody who would never in a million years pass muster? You know, think of the Randy Moss situation. For those that don't know Randy Moss's history, he was actually committed to Notre Dame, he took forever to get his application in. You know, and the football staff kept bugging him and bugging him. Come on, you got to get the application in so admissions can process you, so we can get you enrolled. And when he finally did, it was like he sat down and took 5 minutes to fill out the form and, you know, wrote three word answers to the essay questions and things like that. And so it went into admissions, and admissions took a look at this and said, "No, we can never admit anybody under these circumstances. You know, we would never." We wouldn't give this application a second look, so they rejected him, and he had to go find someplace else to go to school, which was Florida State, before he wound up settling on Marshall after getting kicked out of Florida State. Hopefully, and from what I've seen, Randy Moss has grown up a lot, and he's not a bad guy or anything like that. He sort of had that reputation when he was younger, but. So everybody can grow up, but, you know, there's some level of integrity there, no matter how good a football player is, because as you can imagine, he would have been a really good football player at Notre Dame, just like he was elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Well, now does it reach the point where, I was talking to some people last night, just, you know, having a glass of beer, and is it high enough up the chain to where if your kid is on the waiting list, or like, in other words, where he's not just some amorphous, here's Gene's desk with the 200 people that made it and somebody else's desk with the 15,000 people who didn't. If he actually was closer, he or she, where they were on a waiting list, and maybe the waiting list they'll never tell you, I'm sure. So if the waiting list is 15 people long, and you can find out that 8 people got into, pick a spot, Slippery Rock, that maybe shouldn't have. Now, do the 8 people on the waiting list who didn't get in, is that a class suit? Would they win anything? Is it important? Can they show enough damage where they didn't go to Slippery Rock and they went to Sidewalk State that somehow or another their whole life was ruined? I mean, I don't buy that necessarily. But I mean, is there enough? I mean, how much difference is there? How much are you harmed? You know, I mean, We're going to go down this road.
Yeah, can you prove you were the last person not accepted?
Well, you don't have to be. If all eight people jump in, somebody wasn't. My point was, is if you could prove eight people got in that didn't, and you could find out that the waiting list was 15 people long, then the people who sue, all eight sue, right? Because you could make the case that if I was on a waiting list, I wasn't just a regular schmuck that got tossed. I mean, I'm not making a case. I'm just saying, yeah.
I hear what you're saying. I think the bigger issue is that it really is more an integrity issue than a liability issue. I hear where you're going with it, but I'm far less concerned about the liability and more of the lack of integrity at some of these schools. Now, it may be individuals who had gone rogue, and I'm perfectly willing to wait and hear the stories on that. But it makes no sense to me that this would be allowed to go on so flagrantly. You know, at the very least, you know, buy a building. Buildings are more expensive though than $50,000 bribes.
Well, I mean, what is other than the parents' ego and maybe some. What is the damage of not getting into the Michigan or Illinois engineering school, either crookedly or not crookedly, and your fallback position is Purdue? 10 years? No, I have no idea what that damage is, if any. You might do better at Purdue. I don't know how you. What would it be, Kevin? I mean, is it that much? I'm going to say that Harvard versus somewhere else law school, probably yes, because these firms blindly. We'll pick anybody up from Harvard, and in fact,
get in the club. That's all you need to do is get in the club.
A person who will go nameless, a friend of mine, said that one year they finally worked at this medium-sized law firm, and finally they said, "Look, we got to get somebody from one of these other places. You know, our guys are really good lawyers, but we don't have the whatever." So they get some guy from Harvard, and they paid up for him. And what's the honors thing? What's the honors thing for a lawyer? What do they call it? Legal review or something?
Oh, law review, yeah.
So the guy's on the law review. He gets there and they get this guy. And he goes, first of all, the guy's an idiot. And secondly, every time one or two of the secretaries go to make copies, the guy's kind of grabbed her behind. So finally, this is long before, he had all the HR issues. So finally, my buddy, he says to him, if I catch you doing it again, I'm gonna dot your I right here. That was the way of saying that was the way in those days of making people behave, and I guess it worked. And they fired the guy after 6 months after they'd given him a guaranteed contract. See, he said he came with absolutely every bell and whistle on his. He'd done this in this summer. He had clerked for this appellate court judge. He'd done this. You know, I said the guy not only was a moron, he was totally unethical, and he was a grabber.
Business schools, law schools. I think they let us down on ethics a lot. There's been a lot written over the years about the need to reinject ethical development, and frankly, I have an approach I advocate because it comes up sometimes in classes, and of course, I just finished teaching a business ethics class. But I think it starts at a really root level. And what I would do if I were advising someone about, how to, because lots of companies have ethics plans or ethics programs or ethics statements and so on. But if I were really advising someone on what to do, I would say, this drives, whether it's from your human resources department or someplace else in the company, that it drives with what I would refer to as everyday ethics, just the simple situations. And what I would do is everybody has team meetings every week or every 2 weeks or sometimes every day, and I would be giving them cases, simple cases. The case of someone taking credit for another person's work, the case of someone, just even simple stuff like walking out the door with some office supplies and things like that, stocking up, for the back to school time, all those kinds of things. But you bring all the basic stuff front and center, and you have your teams talk about them, not with right answers and wrong answers, but with what do you do, and what are the challenges you face, and you know, at what point are you willing to risk your job on something? You know, those kinds of questions, because once people start thinking about it as part of their day-to-day mindset, then you have a fighting chance to get the big stuff right.
But how do you? I mean, at Notre Dame, where you and I mean, we were in the same dorm for 4 years. I was an RA. You know, people knew me. I mean, hopefully, they knew me enough. That's why they made me an RA. You were in Chicago, Kevin. I commuted. I lived at home because I lived in Chicago. I was there, and it was very quantitative. I mean, there were all kinds of people. I mean, we never had this style that are all over professors. You know, I mean, now everybody's got this communication where everybody's on Facebook, and you and your professors are like ham and eggs. I never talked to any of these people. I mean, at Notre Dame I did, because we would have our Friday night party, and some of the professors would come by, and you'd BS with them. So I got to know some of those guys. In Chicago, I didn't know a soul. And I never went to anybody's office. I just came in, took the class, took the test, got good grades, and wanted no part of any of these people. I went to class, played basketball, took another class, went home, went to work, went to the bar, and then played basketball league. That was my life. I didn't know a soul. Now, how would they didn't know me. How could you give them any kind of a, I could have been an absolute closet axe murderer they would never have known. Notre Dame, yeah. I mean, University of Chicago, it's like somebody going to night school. How would you ever know who that guy is or what he does or whether he's moral or not?
Most of my students are working people. You know, they may be young in many cases, but they've stayed home, to get at least their first 2 years of school in, while working and not having to pay rent so that they can actually go off to school with some money in their pockets. And I get a pretty good feeling for them, you know, but undergraduate and graduate are really different. You know, I'm a club moderator, yeah. For instance, the National Society for Leadership and Success. I'm the advisor to that for our campus. I really get to know a lot of students in that kind of setting and in the dealing with those kinds of topics. You know, it's part of it is just being available. And I can't speak to graduate school other than having attended it myself because I don't know, but I was in a lockstep program, so when I went to grad school, I was in the same class with all 26 who graduated from the program, and we got pretty close with the deans, and, you know, when we had our big celebration at the end of the, program, then, we rented out a room, hired a DJ, and invited in a whole bunch of the, deans and the instructors. So, my experience is a little bit different, but, you know, we did get to know people, and you can get to know people if you want to.
Well, I mean, he's a professor over at Columbia, and he teaches creative writing and other kinds of stuff. Undergrad, and his experience is very much like yours, because people are writing stuff, and then they all discuss what people write, and you get to know an awful lot about somebody from what they write. And his experience is the same as yours. And I had those experiences at Notre Dame, too. We had creative writing classes and things like that. But I'm saying grad school, I was talking about an in and outer, 75 minutes off to the gym. You know, I guess they could have found out my personality there, but and then another class and I was gone. I mean, it's a whole different law school. I think you definitely work with teams all the time. You know, I saw the movie Paper Chase, but, you know, I mean, I think there are a lot of things.
Definitive statement, yes.
You know, people do, there's a lot more communal study. You know, Chicago prided themselves on always all being very numbers oriented. They didn't care who the hell you were. You know, say, I can say, literally, you didn't know a soul. If you ever want to not meet a soul, go to these night classes where people drag their ass in after working all day. The place wasn't even air-conditioned, Kevin. And I'm sitting there for 2.5 hours. I'm going, God, these guys, their whole career was like that? They used to have guys.
Well, here's the other thing. Once I've had students, you know, in a class for the second or third time, I know them pretty well, too.
Yeah, well, I guess, but I'm saying these were 75, 80 people in every one of these classes. You know, so I mean, it would be pretty hard. And you know, you're teaching accounting, all you do is see the test.
I kind of cap out at 30 at the max, so usually a full course for me runs, you know, in the 27, 26 type of range. Some classes smaller. Ethics class only had 7, and we had lots of really good conversations as a result.
Well, we did the one class I took in the economics department, history of economic thought. It was 2 quarters, and there were only 10 people sitting at a table. So I'd say that's the one class that everybody knew everybody. Talk about a bunch of characters. I was the only guy in there who was a business school guy. Talk about a difference between people. The economic people want to stay there as long as possible. It's their life. If they don't graduate till they're 40, they're happy. business school people are paying. They want in, they want out, they want their 20 classes, and they're gone. You're talk about a different mentality. Pretty straight. But anyway, Kevin, what do you think comes of all this? I mean, I think they're going to have to tighten up these tests, the thought that people can go. Matter of fact, our buddy Beldo last night was telling me that he knew a guy who actually played football for Miami, and he was on and I guess he was in law school, and he was a brilliant guy, so he used to take people's law school tests. This is back, you know, 40 years ago. I mean, I don't think it's all that new.
No, there's nothing new under the sun. It's just, you know, what degree of corruption and who's involved. A different question. Will this affect, of course, it's just two actors right now that are front and center in this, although there may wind up being more. But does this affect you as a consumer of their material? Now, in the case of Lori Loughlin, I didn't watch anything she ever did anyway.
I don't care.
But, you know, it's sort of like, you know, right now, if I see something with Cosby in it, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
You know, I used to really enjoy Bill Cosby's work, but now I look at it and go, that guy's just a creep.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of times people that have serious talent have issues. I mean, where you're not going to look at a Van Gogh painting because he was nuts? I mean,
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I'm asking. I'm throwing the question out there. Is, you know, how will this affect them career-wise? How will it? Does this bad impression now that we all have of them is that going to continue to matter when it comes to, you know, will they get the next movie? Will you watch? You know, when something comes on cable, are you going to look and go, oh, that...
What about the guys?
Thank you.
What about the guys that are presidents of the corporation? You're not going to buy their stuff? I don't know.
That's a good question. You know, is at what point does this stuff really matter? Because that's ultimately the test, as far as I'm concerned, is, you know, does it matter to us really or not?
If I was the guy doing the hiring of the next actress, and I would not be the guy from Fox... I'd probably look to the next lady. That would be me. That's probably not right either, but that would be me. I don't know.
It's kind of something that I'm throwing out there. I don't know where to go with it.
I'm just saying it probably would. You know why? It's like two football players. One guy has baggage, one doesn't. I don't need the baggage. You know why should I burden the other people on the set with that baggage? They're just trying to make a movie. SP Futures up 12:50. Danza Futures up 40. Kevin, thank you. We'll be right back. Mr. Frank Fahey. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program. As well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening.
Well, I'm up by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Mill Weber. S&P futures up 13.50 now. NASDAQ futures up 44 with the exception of yesterday. We will have had, well, assuming this hangs in here today, which I think it will. We have four pretty strong days this week after a pretty crummy week last week. Again, we're going to keep pushing out the headlines this morning as Trump talking about a trade deal in 3 to 4 weeks. I, for one, am tiring of this, but I guess it's the cards are being dealt. I've managed to stay long for my people, so that part's good. And a matter of fact, we've been so long within the protected index program that I'm doing that we really haven't been hurt by the fact that we're hedged. So I'm a little slow to roll up puts, I'm fast to roll up calls because it looks to me like we got a little bit more to go here. Don't know. My feeling of the market is has changed of what it is since I graduated from school years and years and years ago. I used to think the market was an incredible indicator, and now it's being come at from so many different directions politically. I think it's ceased to become an economic indicator and more of a political indicator, and I think that in the long run that's dangerous, but that doesn't mean you don't want to be right today. As a matter of fact, in some ways, as I've kind of learned to look at it, instead of thinking it's the way it used to be, looking at it in new ways, I've gotten to be a better trader, man. If that's scary, huh? Matter of fact, for a while I was in denial it could be this shallow. Now that I realize it is this shallow right now, it's almost easier to pick up the winds of the finger. What did the guy say? Right now the wind is blowing from Vichy, so I'm Vichy in Casablanca. what do you make of all this stuff going on with the? I'm stunned at the people who got involved, the actresses and heads of corporations and all kinds of people. I was reading the list yesterday. And at first of all, I don't know any of these people. They're all CEOs and so forth. But, I mean, the list is pretty long, and I'm sure they keep adding to it by the day. I mean, I guess it doesn't surprise me that people would pull strings to get people in school. And the morality just seems to be I don't know. It seems like right now our morals seem to be a little bit in the ether, should you say. I mean, Lou doesn't even accuse you of being a moral relativist anymore because you've become very moral compared to the rest of the world. I don't know what. What do you make of this? I mean,
I don't have kids, but I, from what I understand, when you do have them, there's some unrelenting pull that you can't really control, that you will pretty much do anything in your power to give them the best life possible. If that means, you know, if you come from means and your kid is lazy or not smart enough or whatever, but you think that they should still go to the best school because it'll better their life, then you'll probably do whatever you can to get them in. And that seems to be the case here. Now, you know, does it make it right? No, but I can sort of, I guess, understand, why people would do that. It's like Forrest Gump where, you know, the mom is willing to like have sex with the admissions guy to get the son in just because she knows that if he doesn't go to any college, then he's going to be in big trouble. And she didn't have any money, so she did the next best thing she could do. I think parents are crazy when it comes to their kids.
For me, it was so different, and I'd love to hear your. I mean, from me, I went to Catholic high school, and a bunch of guys there were going to Notre Dame, and other people were going elsewhere, and they were all Midwestern people going to another Midwestern place. It seemed like, plus I was only 17, I was very young. I mean, I'm not so sure that my mother, who was pretty darn bright, she would never have pulled any strings to get me to Harvard. She knew I didn't belong in Harvard. And intellectually, I probably could hang with those guys, but she goes, that wasn't us. You know, neither was Yale. I mean, when we graduated, when I graduated from Notre Dame and all the parents of the 10 or 12 people, we had a party. It was absolutely amazing. The parents, it was like they knew each other their whole life. They were all the same. They were all kind of, everybody had fought in a war. Half the guys had gone to with the GI Bill. You know, everybody had worked their way up. They were like, most of us were the first generation that ever went to college except for the GI Bill. And it was almost the exact same people. I mean, it's kind of where I belonged. Now, if I got out of school now, Notre Dame's changed dramatically. Would I go there? Hell no.
It's absolutely changed, right?
Yeah, it absolutely changed. So, I mean, I think it's important for your kid to go somewhere where they're sort of comfortable. And maybe a couple of kids in their high school class. I mean, I wouldn't a man on the moon want a kid who, you know, who's just a regular guy, has his friends, hangs around, plays some sports, a decent guy or girl. Would I want to send them out on an island to Stanford where they don't know a soul or whatever just because it's Stanford? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I don't. There's a progression of things. I mean, if me or your, you know, maybe your future daughter is just an intellectual standout and she just loves to go places and on Facebook she knows people from California and everything else, well then it's different. But I think there needs to be a flow. You're not something you're not. And it seems like, you know, a lot of these people, just because I'm a chairman of a corporation, my kid has to go to Harvard. He wants no part of Harvard.
There's different levels to the world, as we all know, and I can't relate to any of this whatsoever. I mean, I was told when I was in high school, like, hey, if you want to go to college, we think you should, but you know, you're on your own. So, you know, apply for whatever loans you can get, and you know, my mom went to junior college and got her associates, and that's all she has. And, you know, she runs a multi-million-dollar business now because she's just a hard worker and just a grinder.
Right.
But it was never a thought in her mind that I needed to go to some, you know, fancy school and grad school. I mean, that wasn't even discussed. It was just, hey, if you want, you know, we think it's a good idea, but, you know, you're on your own and you're going to have to pay it back. So we recommend going to a 2-year school and then, If that works out for you, then go to, you know, a technical school or something like that. Or if you can, then transfer to a 4-year school. But some kids, everything's paid for. And so it's like a status thing. And I can't relate to any of that. So I don't know.
Well, there's sort of a middle ground there somewhere. And in my background is so unusual. Because the creatures that were in my family were so different. I mean, my grandfather came to Italy, I think with his uncle. Didn't want to go back because he didn't want to be a priest. So I think he ditched his uncle here. Now, how the hell the uncle went back without the nephew That had to be an interesting conversation with the old man when he got back to Italy.
I would say so.
But anyway, he was here, and he was a water boy on the railroad, and rode the rails, hobo camps, the whole bit. And then this is, you know, this is, God knows what year this had to be, like in the 20s. Then he ended up getting a job on the railroad, and then we had a family early, and then he went to drafting school at night, you know, after he came home from, you know, and ended up being a master boilermaker. And he had the family, and my mom was a standout. I mean, she was valedictorian of high school, and, you know, to his dying day, so the thing that I did wrong is I should have found a way to send your mother to college, because she was that bright. And you know, and my mom was missed school. I mean, there was no question that when I was in third grade and was pretty bright, you were going to college. And you were going to be the first.
Right.
And by the way, that's just a progression of things, and we're going to save up for it, and we're going to, you know, but then it wasn't, you know, 70 grand a year. It was 3 grand a year, so you could, quote, save up for it.
Right.
And it was a normal progression. I mean, I just went right there. And for her mind, why shouldn't you? I mean, why shouldn't you get the advantage if it's right there in front of you? And by the way, we can afford it. And you know, I always worked and made sure that all the spending money was mine and everything. It was just a different era. You could be a part of the expenses then. I mean, like I said, the tuition was 3 grand. The other stuff, all the, you know, my, the beers, the books, the everything else was probably 1500. And I covered that by working. Well, you can't cover your expenses now by working. I mean, come on. I used to make almost as much as kids are making now. You know, I mean, as much work in the truck docks as kids are making in the McDonald's.
Yeah.
And that was 1971. I mean, so, I mean, you know, I mean, is that crazy or what? I mean, it really
it is. Yeah.
So the idea that you should be a fish out of your game isn't, but why shouldn't you have the advantage? I mean, my stepfather clearly had the GI Bill. And he became an accountant and went to DePaul, and I won't say easier, but he was able to move up, you know, in a place different than people who were doing other stuff. And I think an education is actually a terrific thing for people. I mean, that's why I shudder when people say, why is somebody there learning economics or sociology or whatever? Because you don't, I mean, the whole world is not a trade school.
I agree. I think that's such a stupid opinion.
Yeah.
When people say stuff like that. But I also, I don't see any, importance in, you know, going to, or paying or cheating or whatever to go into one school over the other.
Well, I don't either.
Because I think you can get a terrific education at so many different schools.
Well, that's my point. I don't see if I would have, not gotten into Notre Dame. And all of a sudden would have gone to DePaul. Would that have made that much difference? I can't believe it would have.
No, as far as your education?
No.
No, your experience would have been different.
Yeah, it might have been better.
It might have been better. Probably not, but definitely could have been. But no, your education I think would have been just as good.
Would I have ended up in my particular time, I was very lucky to meet, there's 10 or 12 of us like Kevin, that I've kept in touch with for friggin' 50 years. They were friends like we were in college. I mean, that's an unusual situation, to find people that you're that close with for that period of time that are, you know, totally honest as the day is long. I'll tell you one thing that was bad about my Notre Dame education is, I never locked my door, and if your wallet was on the desk, you never even thought about somebody grabbing something out of it. And the idea that everybody in the world is honest is something I have to learn over and over again since then is not true, because my first thought is everybody is. And then to make it even worse, to spill my personal guts, to go to the trading floor, everybody's incredibly honest on the trading floor because your life depends on it. And yet, in the radio world, especially, or in other worlds, when I leave that, my two sacred spots would be college and the trading floor, where everybody was honest. You would never guess that about a trading floor. But how many times we've talked to radio stations and so forth, I've never met a person who isn't a pathological liar. Absolutely a pathological liar. And I'm sitting there going, this guy would never have been allowed in our dorm. He surely would never have been allowed on the trading floor. He'd have been there a half an hour and somebody would have thrown him out bodily. And yet other businesses are like that. You can't, I mean, if somebody says it's sunny outside, you gotta go look out the window. I mean, baby, to this day, I do not recognize that in people. My first thought is to think they're okay. And in some industries, that should be your last thought. mean, I don't know what it's like in your industry, but that's why I love.
My experience is people have been pretty straight. I mean, I haven't dealt with too many that were just completely backwards. But yeah, I mean, definitely in the media business, that's a dirty game.
Well, I've done a lot of expert witness stuff for people in our industry. And the idea that people will absolutely flat out lie under oath, that never even crossed my mind. I mean, I don't lie, not under oath, let alone. I mean, there's people that will tell you that they were sick when they won't, or this one or that. And they'll tell you, in some of these things I've been on, people will blame somebody for losing their money, and then you check the stuff, and the guy wasn't even there. Their money was. They get their dates quote confused. I mean, it's unbelievable what people will say if told to say there's money involved. Let's talk before Jan calls in. Let's talk a bit more about the NCAA. What other than the St. Mary's thing? Who does that boot? Who's
well? It's not good for Indiana. A lot of people considered their game yesterday here at the United Center against Ohio State was a play-in game for both those teams, because both those teams are firmly on the bubble, and Ohio State squeaked by Indiana, so Ohio State, most people believe now, is firmly in, and Indiana is probably on the outside looking in, and they probably need every favorite to win in every other conference tournament, and they still might not get in, but they at least have a shot. So, they're affected absolutely by St. Mary's upsetting Gonzaga. Other than that, we'll see. It's still early. Most of the tournaments are in the quarterfinals beginning today, so we'll see if there's any more major upsets. Nebraska's making a run in the Big Ten tournament, which is a huge surprise because they're, 13th in the conference. They might have been 14th in the conference, and, they upset Maryland yesterday. And so, I don't think they have a chance to go any further, but, that would be interesting. I tell you what, I was in Vegas this week, and last year I was in Vegas during the first week of the NCAA tournament. This year I'm there, the week before, so it's the conference tournament, so it's not quite as cool, but there is nothing better than getting up. The games start at 9 a.m. locally.
Wow.
And you can go and, go to the sports book, put bets down, and then, you're working a booth, so you're kind of going back and forth, but throughout the day, you can watch games and go to lunch and watch games and bet on the games all day. And there's different fan bases there. And the Pac-12 tournament was there. And staying at the hotel that we were at, so we saw Bill Walton, we saw Richard Jefferson, we saw Gary Payton, we saw Bobby Hurley. A lot of the people that were coaching, playing, or covering that tournament were all in our hotel. And it's hard to miss, 6'10" guys walking around. And so that was cool. And then we met a lot of people from, Washington and Oregon and Arizona and all these different fan bases. And they made the trek to Las Vegas and made a weekend out of it.
Now, your understudy, Jay-Z, is going to Arizona next week. And I said, make sure that you have I assume these phones that everybody has are set up for interviews. I said, I expect you to come back with two interviews from two players. No, how come you didn't come back with an interview from Bill Walton? That would have been interesting.
Well, I didn't really bother anybody, but it would have been very cool. And, man, he really kind of limps around. I think he's got, major back issues, it would appear, because he's, but he's still a huge man.
I'm going to say that anybody who has had foot issues forever ends up screwing up something else, probably your back.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it, and he's obviously an older guy now, but he's still a huge, massive man, and real pleasant to everybody. But he just kind of limps around. And
those guys, the years that they put in there. I mean, what did Phil Jackson say that he ended up playing in a playoff game when his back was hurt, and he hurt it worse? He says the worst mistake he ever made in his life.
Yeah,
he's paid for it ever since.
Larry Bird, he famously hurt his back doing his mom's driveway because he didn't really understand that he should be hiring somebody to do that. So he asphalted his mom's driveway, hurt his back, and it was never the same. Tried to play through it, and it never. And God, talk about a career getting cut short.
Yeah,
and the guy was phenomenal. The back, that's the big one you want to avoid.
I never forget one of my buddies who was actually a very good basketball player, and he was really into it. He's like you, and he went to. There was a game somewhere. I don't know where the hell they were playing. They weren't playing DePaul, but he actually drove to Indiana. They were Indiana State was playing. I don't know if it was Gary or somebody, but there was another team in that whatever league that is that was in Indiana. Maybe he drove to Purdue. I don't know. But he goes, I want to see if this guy was that good. Because nobody can be that good. He's basically no white guy can be that good. He comes back and he goes, you don't believe this guy. I mean, because he says, I don't know if he can jump. He said, but, I mean, when they say basketball, there's three things. There's your hands, your court awareness, and how quick your shadow, whatever the third one is, and your eyesight or whatever, or your lateral movement or something. Whatever the three things you need to play basketball. I mean, everybody forgets the part about hands. Once the ball comes near them, it's theirs. That's what Adrian Dantley, I mean, he wasn't that big.
Yeah.
Once his big paws got on the thing, I mean, you weren't getting it. I mean, that's why he was a standout tight end and everything else in high school.
Oh, yeah.
He says, this guy is unreal. He's the real deal. I mean, he can't really get off the ground that much, but his shot is so quick, it doesn't matter. And he just has the eyesight to wherever he knows where everybody is. His peripheral vision is unbelievable. But he basically described Larry Bird's game. I mean, well, the guy could have been a scout.
Larry Bird, so he was 6'9", but then he also kind of shot behind his head.
Yeah.
And so his shot was impossible to defend, and he could get it off against anybody. If you put a tall guy on him, he could still get it off, no problem. If you put a short guy on him, then he would just back that guy down and shoot his fadeaway.
Yeah.
But one thing that I remember, and I remember sort of the latter part of his career because I was too young when he was, you know, in college and in the early part of his NBA career. But in the late 80s, early 90s, he wasn't quite the same player as he was because of the back.
Yeah.
He was still great. But he, you know, Magic gets the credit for being the best passer. Larry Bird might have been just as good of a passer as Magic. I mean, watching those Celtics teams of the 80s, the way they shared the ball was a thing of beauty.
Oh, right. I mean, they definitely did. And to be honest, they scored more, you know, they scored, a lot of those teams averaged more points without the three-point line.
Right. They played a fast-paced game, and there wasn't the grabbing and holding on every single possession that there is today.
Yeah.
And it was a spacing and movement game with a lot of pace. And when the game's played that way, it's a beautiful game. And the Warriors they play that way today.
Yes, yes.
And that's why they're so fun to watch. And the Rockets play that way as well. But there's not a lot of defense. And, it's just two different ways to play. And you watch some of the college teams. North Carolina, I think, is really fun to watch because they get up and down the floor. They share the ball. They shoot quick. But then you watch teams like Virginia and Wisconsin, and you can still win by playing a completely slow defensive game with a low number of possessions,
yep.
And you can still win. It's the same game, but it's almost like you're watching two different games.
Well, if the other guys are better than you, you want to minimize the amount of possessions.
Right, yeah.
Did you hear the comment of your buddy Steve Kerr? Last week, I was watching. They're like the only team I watch. You know,
they're really fun to watch.
Yeah, but they were playing. And they were losing in the first. I don't know who they were playing. They're losing in the first half, and Steve Kerr walks back on the floor, and of course the smoking hats reporter comes running over and says, "Well, what did you tell him at halftime?" He goes, "You know, protect the ball, do this, play defense, basically everything that every coach has told everybody at halftime since the game was invented." She looks at him like. Oh, but he's like, it's true, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
protect the ball, play defense, hustle. I mean, what are you going to tell people with football? Let's block, let's tackle. I mean, okay, duh.
But there's not much more you can say. No. And then when you have 82 games a season,
yeah. And
you've been with the same team for 5 years now or whatever. I mean, they've heard it all. There's no rah-rah speech that you can give.
I mean, I could see where you come in and say, all right, you know, this is our third game in 4 nights, and. You know, I can understand we're a little wobbly the first half, but let's try and put one half together. Anyway, we got a day off tomorrow. I can see that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's probably what they do.
Yeah,
I mean that's the conversation you have.
I mean, you're talking to adults. You're not talking about, you know, I mean, for God's sake, what are you going to beat Rackney?
Right. One interesting thing, dynamic, was being at a hotel casino where there's, you know, alcohol everywhere, there's prostitutes everywhere, there's...
Well, they still got the hookers down there?
Oh, yeah, they're around. I mean, they're a little more disguised.
Are they on the street or just inside?
Inside.
Okay.
And, but they're there. Oh, yeah. Especially late night. They hover around looking for, like, the drunk guy. That's
okay.
You know, not that I was ever that guy.
They're looking for the blackjack winner, too.
I was the blackjack loser. But I did win my sports bets, so all in all, it was a good week.
Are you doing any craps?
No, I don't really know how to play craps. I mean, I know the basics, but I don't
have a teacher.
Yeah, strategically, I've been taught like three different times too, and I always forget. But I usually just play blackjack, maybe a little poker, and then I'll play games.
Just do the pass line. If you're slow, just do the pass line and make sure you always take the double odds behind. It's the only even money bet in Vegas. And if you want to ramp the speed up, then between when the guy's fishing for seven or the number, you bet the come line and you're just starting all over again. The rest of the board just ignore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the best odds bet in the casino, right?
Well,
playing craps.
Let me give you the recipe, and this should be intuitive to you and the listeners. The faster the game, meaning the bigger the handle, the better the odds.
Why is that?
Because if you take the odds on craps are like 0.2%. Just what I'm talking about, the pass line and taking twice the odd behind. It's so close to 50-50, you're almost there. Yet, if you look at a big craps game, look at the amount of money bet in an hour. Compare that to like the big wheel or a roulette or something. Because then, if the slower the game goes, the more the casino essentially charges to play it.
Right. Okay.
So in a crap game, if you actually total up the amount in a big game, the amount of money that crosses the line, shall we say, in an hour, it could be, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars in a big game. Where in blackjack, even if people are playing, blackjack's pretty close. I mean, if you know.
Yeah, I saw a guy get hot playing blackjack and he was betting like 400 a hand at the $25 tables. And I saw him win like 12 grand in about 30 minutes. And I don't know if he gave a bunch of it back after I walked away, but it was pretty, I mean, people were like gathering around. It was pretty spectacular.
Well, in blackjack, usually the luck is determined not just by the blackjacks, but how you do on your double downs. Because the better player you are, the more often you're going to recognize the advantage and double down.
Right.
And if you win three or four rows in a row, you're off to the races. If you lose them, you're like going, okay, I know what I'm doing. I'm doing the right thing, and I'm getting eviscerated for it. You know, but I mean, SP Futures still up 13.25. We've been dead right here. NASDAQ Futures up 43.75. Come back, have Mr. John Neal.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Low and up, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Just met over to board. Mr. John Neal in a second. SP Futures up 13 and a quarter. We've been stuck there, which is fine. We're up a bunch. NASDAQ Futures up 41.75. Dow Futures up about 130. So we're, president came out 3-4 weeks, might have a deal. I am so tired of reading this. Dow set to climb more than 100 points on a U.S.-China trade deal hoax. I don't know if this thing ever does get signed, wherever this thing is, if we're going to go flying down or whether it's going to go up more, who the hell knows, but just wish it to be over with. Over in Europe, the DAX up 115, that's a full 1%. FTSE up 45.6%, CAC around up 51, that's a full 1%, so everybody's jumping on this one. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 163.8%, Shanghai up 31, back over 3,000, 3,021, that's a full 1%, Hang Seng up 160, 0.6%. We've got oil down 34 cents, 58.24, Brent down 49.66, 74. So we're down to, wow, that's $8.50. That's a $2 move in that spread in about 3 weeks. Natural gas, 282. RBOB gas down a penny. Wow, 183. Anybody who hasn't noticed, that was 135 in, I'm going to say, December 1. So we're up almost 50 cents in gasoline. I'm thinking you're seeing that at the pump. Gold also rallying this morning. Gold is up 780, back over 1300, 1302. Silver up 18, 19 cents, 1536. So it looks like I'm going to get a little push in there this morning on my gold stock. Betty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues on the Edens. Kennedy looks okay. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. We did have that earlier pothole on the Stevenson. That was a significant issue, causing all kinds of flat tires earlier this morning. That was at LaGrange Road on the northbound side of the Stevenson. Apparently, that has been patched up because that is now off the screen. So I hope that IDOT took care of that because that was affecting a lot of folks this morning getting flat tires. Southside expressways are looking okay. Out in the suburbs, there's one crash to report. It's out in Downers Grove. Main Street at Franklin, there is an accident. But everything else looks good out there. Weather today, it's going to be kind of a dreary, miserable day today. Cold, a high of just 39 with rain and sleet mix in the forecast. Right now it's overcast and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a beautiful day. Partly cloudy skies, lots of sunshine, high of 75. Right now it's clear and 47. In sports, Blackhawks were off last night. Coyotes keep winning. They blew out the Ducks 6-1. Bulls and Suns were off. College hoops, Illinois season's over. They were blown out by Iowa in the Big Ten tournaments 83-62. Illini finished with a 12-21 record, their worst record in school history. Northern Illinois is still alive. They advanced to the semifinal of the MAC tournament, beating Toledo 80-76. Chief.
John, how are you?
Doing good. Good morning, guys.
I'm going to take 1 minute here of largesse just to prove to the listeners once and for all how nuts I really am. When I was young, Maddie, my family absolutely loved to play cards. That's all we did. You know, they gambled every Sunday. There was a poker game.
every Saturday, my aunt and uncle went to two racetracks. They did what they call the double dip. They'd go to Arlington and they'd go to the Sportsman's at night. I mean, we were just, anyway, that's just the way a lot of families were like that, because you couldn't do anything online or anything like that in those days. And I played poker at least two nights a week in college my last 2 years. I mean, I
love playing poker. I miss playing poker.
I do too. I haven't played in a long time. But we played in high school. I mean, whatever. And I played in Pullman. I had a bunch of guys that moved here from Philly.
Did you ever play poker at the casino?
No, but my mommy's play all the time.
Really? Even when you went to Vegas, you never went to a poker
room? No, I always played blackjack. Yeah. I don't know why, but...
Poker's a lot of fun at casinos, too.
What do you mean? But she plays not the hold'em. She would go play... I don't know if she played draw or stud.
You can play anything. Yeah. Now the poker rooms are mostly hold'em.
Yeah.
But you can get like a 1-2 game, and you can get different limits. It's not always no limit, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, my mom was always an early riser. My stepfather would be hacking around all morning, so she'd take the elevator downstairs and go to a poker game, and there'd be 5 shills, and she'd pop in, and one of the shills would get up and leave, and got to where she knew all the shills were on a first-name basis. And, people are I won't say not educated enough to know that the people playing there at that hour in the morning are not all poker players or shills. So what happens is if John Neal goes and sits down, one of the shills goes, well, excuse me, I got to go somewhere. And then off they go until finally you get a game, right? But you're not going to sit down by yourself.
Right.
So you get to... Anyway, but she was good enough to hang. Certainly good enough to play with them. And, she was okay. And, better than me. But I read this book, The Original Treatise on Cards. It was a guy named John Scarney. And he wrote this book. It saved people more money in World War II than just about anything, because of course soldiers did nothing but gamble, right? I mean, if you don't know if you're gonna die the next day. There were card sharks that were in the army that would go from place to place. They were, what do you call a guy, either one of you guys, the name for somebody who can deal out of like the bottom or the middle of the deck and so forth, a second card? What do you call those guys? Have you ever seen The Cincinnati Kid?
I did see that movie. I don't know what you call those guys.
John?
I can't remember either.
They're called a mechanic.
Yeah, it's a mechanic.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a mechanic.
It's a mechanic. That's 100% right.
So John Scarney would teach people, there's a certain way you have to hold the hand, the cards, I never know how to do this, to where if you don't hold them just that way, you can't cheat. So you should at least learn to recognize essentially the cheater's grip of the deck, and if you see somebody doing that, get out of that game.
Right, yeah.
But he was a magician in card, and he did some of the early work on odds and poker and blackjack and so forth. And then it was, following him was a guy named Jim Thorpe. And he came out with the book Beat the Dealer, where he finally got all the odds on blackjack, because it's very difficult to determine odds on blackjack. I mean, it's real different because of all the decision processes involved. And he would take, if you did just what the dealer did, what your odds would be. If you did this strategy, essentially with the advent of computers, he was able to do that. And Manny, if you could do it, it'd be a feather in your cap. I'd love to have him on the show as a guest. Not just because of the blackjack, but he's, to be perfectly blunt, he's very pissed off about this because the financial world does not give him credit. He created like a bunch of option models and financial models long before, the guys from the University of Chicago. John, help me. Who did the original option model originally? What? It wasn't the original one. It was Black-Scholes.
Black-Scholes, yeah.
He did stuff before Black-Scholes. And he almost is pissed off he doesn't get any accolades. And I don't know if he does interviews very much, but if you could get him on, that would be one of our best shows ever. I would love to talk to that guy.
We can definitely reach out to him.
I would talk to him for 2 hours, and I'd talk to him the next day. Can you imagine how much we'd talk about with blackjack and
markets?
Yeah, good Lord. And anyway, we should. So, John, that was my one minute for myself. What do you make of this? How many more days, we keep asking, do we get somebody's going to buy futures out of the White House? I know I'm accusing without knowing what I'm talking about. Somebody's going to buy futures and then put out something that we think we're going to have a deal tomorrow. Is this going on like every day or what?
Oh yeah, it's more of the same. We talk about this, week in and week out, and once again, it's why we protect what we have, because we don't know when these type of things happen, one way or the other.
The good news is I did a repair in the Russell, and this morning up 50 cents. If we can hang in here till the opening, and I sell it here, I got a nice fat winner.
Oh, good.
You know, and I can't believe it. We're up here, but I have been actually, even though I've got in the last 8 weeks, John, I put so much money in a protected program, more than I have in the last really 10 years. I've done in the last 5 weeks, and I'm
right.
But I left myself so long in there, where you know the calls are web. I'm just now starting to get to where we're nudging near the calls, and it's
right.
been my first buy in the queues was 161, and the thing's 177, and I've managed to stay out of the way of the calls for 17 points, which I'm pretty proud of myself on that. But I mean, I started out with like the 68, so it's been pretty easy to do that. And I just keep plus the queue's a pretty easy roll. I mean, I never really did much in there before. Now I'm using that, and you can go up dollar and a half, maybe even two, a week or two for credit. So there's no reason not to stay out of the way.
Well, exactly.
But we're going to get a little bounce on our goal today, finally, too. What do you think? What's that all about?
Yeah, that I'm not sure either. Pulled down a good bit. I was able to maneuver in the gold. I think we talked about this on Tuesday. So that helped me, with that little bit of a pullback to kind of get more in line with those calls and things like that. So,
Jen, what are you doing? I'll ask you on here. What are you doing to mitigate? Zach Hilly, I've had positions in this thing forever for my people, and it's been an okay performer, especially lately. I have problems with this thing because if you put something on and the thing's trading for a implied volatility of say 19, 18 and a half, and you put it on, and you say, okay, at this number, I'll be able to sell some calls. Every time the piece of Duke goes up a point, the volatility drops a half.
Right.
So now that it's up here, I'd love to sell some calls. The implied volatility is like a 16. And I'm sitting there, I don't want to sell calls at 30 cents, 35. Every time it moves your way, it kind of screws you a little bit on the implied volatility.
That volatility, right.
And I hate to start selling stuff at 20, 25, 30 cents. Then when you don't sell it, you say to yourself, okay, if I sold it for 25 cents every 2 weeks, that's 50 cents a month, that's $6, that's 10%. You know, why aren't you selling it? You know, but you and I don't want to be buying something back at $2. We sold at 25 cents, so there's definitely a.
That's the problem.
Yeah,
that's the rub. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, even though we're good at what we do and we have a pretty good strategy, it doesn't mean that it's easy.
Oh no! It takes a lot of that, tinkering with and thinking and massaging it all the time.
That's why it's somewhat of a professional thing. It's not something. It's really not something anybody can. I don't think anybody can do it at home unless somebody's been a trader or something. It's difficult to stay because we're moving all over the place. I mean, we're
right, and we're watching it all day long.
I've never seen. Somebody was asking me last night about the market. I said I've never seen for a long period of time as politically dominated. I mean, clearly, Gulf War 1, Gulf War 2. I mean, you watch the news more than you watched fundamental stock values. I mean, come on, we all know that. But there's been pockets of that, long-term capital, Fed doing this, Y2K, there's always been issues along the way. But this is the first time that an administration has almost purposely, constantly kept the market in a stream of basically crap coming out of the White House and people's response to it and then going the other way. And then the Fed, we've been doing this for too long and we're tightening it a little bit and all of a sudden, oh no, nobody wants that. The market reacted, so now we got to go the other way. I've never seen a sustained period like this since I started, John.
Absolutely correct, Tom. It's very strange.
But you know what's weird? I was mentioning earlier in the show, and I was dying to have you come in and have your take on this. It's actually shallower in the thought process. And to be honest, for a period of time, I'm one of these guys that always was an efficient market kind of guy. So if you see something that's like obvious, like okay, they put out something that we're gonna be done with the China deal 2 days from now, and the market's up. It's pretty obvious to me that somebody there front running whatever. But the way I learned way back in the day was, you never got the memo first. So and the people who did get it first are just as liable to screw up as you are, because they don't really know what the real story is either. That this is all just noise in the system, but now it's almost like it is the real news. it's not if the volatility is cheap, you probably don't want to buy it because it's not going anywhere. Because it seems like somebody seems to know. Like on Wednesday, we had an expiration Wednesday night in the Spiders. John, the straddle at 2:30 was like 40 cents. And guess what? We didn't go anywhere. Yet
right.
2 months ago, at 2:30, the straddle would be $2.50, and all of a sudden we move. It used to be where you'd look at it and say, well, the straddle's cheap. Some people think they know, but they probably don't know because the market's bigger than the people. And once in a while, you're going to be the genius by buying it at 25 cents, and you're going to be collecting $3, and you're going to be going all the way to the bank. But right. now it seems like the players have gotten narrower, that they actually do know more. And you got to be careful, but it also means that the market is shallower. What you see is sort of what you get, which is not what you and I normally, we're trained to think on two levels. I'm not so sure there are two levels anymore. So it actually becomes a little simpler. And I'm not saying I'm killing them, I'm not. I'm just saying it becomes almost a little simpler. You know, that you know after a couple of days of a down market, if we ever get that, we did last week, that all of a sudden you're just going to ramp up the China crap and the next 2 days are going to be up.
I mean, exactly.
I mean, you and I would never have had this conversation 5 years ago. Or
No, not at all.
I mean, certainly not 10 years ago because it always was wink, wink. The people that thought they knew and were willing to sell you the call at an eighth or a 16th or 5 cents or whatever it is, you know, was one of these days was going to be a blithering idiot and he's going to be buying these things back at $5. So you assumed that the people who thought they knew really didn't know or the market was bigger than them. Now I'm not so sure. So now I'm just kind of seeing what the big guys are doing and kind of rolling with it a little bit.
Right. That's all you can do. That's exactly correct, Tom.
And it's been helping since John's group has given me the unusual market activity feed, and I should probably when I get some of this kind of clue you in. But I don't jump on all these because a lot of them are wrong, a lot of them are really speculative. But I've noticed that when you get a stock a couple of times now, it's a small sample where if we get something 2-3 days in a row where people are buying calls or buying puts, it's kind of something to look at. I mean, it doesn't mean you can do something in there because I like to get some edge too. But the days where the stocks where people are like really persistent, you can almost roll with that a little bit. I mean, at least it seems like it. I mean, if it's just one day, if it's a one off, you know, I don't know. But you know, what I'm saying if people kind of keep at it. And one day,
right. Yeah, it's just your typical, not typical or atypical, if you will, you know, momentum play. You know,
yeah.
Your momentum trade, right?
So, I mean, I'm trying to make myself get a little shallower in my thought process because I think the market is a little shallow right now. It's just rolling with whatever you see. We're going to China, not going to China, and things backing off, going back the other way. And I think, I hate like hell to say that because I like to think that the market is this all-encompassing thing. Right now, I'm not so sure it is, John.
Give me a little bit more to think about, to be honest with you. Slightly different angle there, but the more I think about it, I think it is absolutely accurate. So.
Do you honestly think we've had, Russell was on the other day, and he said gold for a while, and so have I, and so have you. If we get any kind of a currency, even a little hint of a currency problem, are we going to get this flight to gold? I won't say us old people, us experienced traders think we will.
Well, I think we'll get a spike, Tom. But I don't think we're going to, see anything like we saw in the past. I think there's a lot of other alternatives out there for things, as a proxy, to money. So, with that being said, I think we'll get a spike, but not as pronounced as we've had in the past.
I'll ask you, and I'll ask Mr. Weber, if all the guys at your basketball team and their wives and girlfriends sense a crisis between the euro and the Russian currency, and Italy starts to fall out with their currency, would your group think to buy gold, or are we going to have that flight to gold where it's going to be $2,000 an ounce, or? Does anybody even know what the hell I'm talking about with gold these days?
I don't think my group's going to buy gold. My group thinks that only old people buy gold.
Okay.
But maybe it is a good thing to buy. I have no idea.
Well, I mean,
now, my group, middle age, I think would still buy some gold, and I, you know, have people, you know, constantly asking about it, but I also, you know, deal with a lot of retirees and things like that, and you know, where that makes sense. But yeah, I think, you know, like what Matt's talking about with the younger generation, I think there's you know, there are all alternatives to gold out there, which is that a good bit.
Well, that's because it's interesting, because you don't normally think, you don't ever think really the mirror image unless you've been sort of trained in it. You don't say, okay, I mean, right now I'm going to guess, Manny, that all your pals and virtually everybody, including me on a daily basis, your concepts of value is the dollar, right?
Correct.
And you don't really think of the dollar as a commodity like anything else. So if all of a sudden the Fed doubles the amount of dollars out there, which they damn near have over the last few years, that the value of the dollar goes down. You don't look at it in terms of gold or medicine or anything that it has actually a value. You know, back in the day in concentration camps where all the studies were done, it was cigarettes. Where there's a value. I mean, if you hold gold, gold isn't any more valuable to you the next day if we double the amount of dollars in the system, but it's more valuable in relation to the dollar now because there's twice as many dollars. It's not any more valuable to you in relation to a car or to your suits or to anything else, you know what I'm saying? But because somebody is inflating one, the relationship to the other is what gets out of whack. It's like if the dollar goes down versus the yen, the dollar versus gold, gold my price might go up here, but if you live in Japan, it could actually be going down. I mean, people in the Midwest especially, and me included, do not normally think that way. Nor should they, really. Why would they? Am I right or not? I mean, because the dollar, we trust the Fed to not do that to the dollar, even though they have at times. And then we wonder what the hell over. Clearly in the 70s, when people were pouring dollars in the system to pay off the Vietnam War debt cheaper, people were not ready for the inflation that happened. And a lot of people got skunked with it, but a lot of people didn't. A lot of people that owned homes did fine. A lot of people that owned two homes did, like, really fine. Because if it was just your own home, you had a place, you sold your place higher, you had to pay more for the next place. So you gained on people who weren't homeowners, but you didn't gain on other homeowners. But if you had two homes, then you gained on everybody. Right, Jen? So it's mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a way in which it spits out. And if you do things properly with the Fed, most people don't have to worry about that. But now the question is, are we in a situation where maybe we have to worry about that? Clearly, the people that own stock in the last 9 years have done way better than people that just had a job or own property, right? I mean, your property hasn't doubled or more or tripled like stock has, right? I mean, I think I don't know what else, man. I mean, the price of old cars, collective stamps, I guess they've gone up, but I don't think they've gone up as much as the market has. So do you, any individual stocks here you really like, John? I saw I was going to ask Matty, we're a couple of weeks away from the IPOs on Lyft and Uber. Have those guys ever made any money?
I don't think either of them made any to this point. So I think a lot of that gets dumped back into, you know, technology, advertising, that kind of thing. It's like with a lot of these things, for me, it would be a, you know, wait and see kind of thing. I'm not overly excited, to be honest with you.
You're
involved in either of them.
Matty, your gang going to be get Uber on its first day? You think it's going to be like Microsoft and hang on to your 1,000 shares and you're rich 20 years from now?
I have no idea, I wouldn't bet against it.
Well, do you think they're ever going to make dough?
I think all these companies make dough. They just find ways to hide it.
Well, they make cash.
I mean, there's no possible way they're not.
What about barriers to entry? Is it easy enough just to get in? If they're making too much money, well, you know more about this than me. What would stop?
I don't know more about this than you. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm saying, what would stop somebody else from having an app on a phone and with 10 cars in a neighborhood in Chicago? You know, we're your Gold Coast Uber. Know the people.
That's an interesting thought. I don't know. I don't know if that's easy to start up or not. I assume it is. I think you can create an app relatively easily. I think a lot of regular people know how to do that. I certainly don't. But you could start your own fleet, and I think that's a reasonable thing. But I've never heard of anyone doing it.
Well, it's got to be easier than start another cab company without medallions.
I don't understand why the cab companies haven't just done exactly that.
I think a lot of cab companies are Uber guys.
Like, I know that, but I'm saying why hasn't the cab company just developed an app of their own and competed with Uber like that? I've never understood why they haven't done that.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. I have no idea.
Good point, too.
What about, real quick, Jen, we only got 20 seconds. Is this Tesla a bomb here or is it a buy? It's way down to 283 this morning.
Yeah, I think for right now I'd stay out of the way of Tesla, to be perfectly honest with you, Tom.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what the story is there. Jen, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend, buddy. SP Futures up 10 now. It was up 13 and a quarter. NASDAQ up 34. Was up 40, but it's still way up. We'll be back on Monday. Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.